Hi, I'm Eric Crossley. Welcome to Making a Difference, Season 2, Episode 5. I may have said Episode 5 was the last episode, but this is actually Episode 5. Thanks for listening, folks. Welcome to February 2021 and new president, new vice president. Again, President Biden and Vice President Harris. I can't say that enough. Congratulations to them, and thank you for listening. The jig is up. That's the name of this episode. The jig is up because now former President Trump is no longer in office. And he is facing not only a Senate trial, which started today, but also numerous dozens and dozens of other charges on the state level and other locations. So we'll be keeping track of that too. But the Senate trial of former President Donald Trump started on Tuesday with a debate and vote on the constitutionality of his second impeachment trial. After 4 hours of debate, the Senate voted 56 to 44 for its constitutionality. Now, the Trump people, the Republicans, almost all Republicans, well, they all are Republicans, were saying that this we can't have a Senate trial after the president's out of office. But Trump was impeached for the second time before he left office. And now he faces trial for a second time. The first time he faced trial, the Republican-controlled Senate didn't even have a trial a year ago. They just decided to acquit him and let everything go, cheating with the Russians to betray our country. That wasn't a big deal. Committing treason and sedition against the country wasn't a big deal. And now, a year later, here we are again. He's out of office, but we're still talking about what happened on January 6th. Now, I'll get to talking more in future episodes coming up as we head into the spring and summer about what's, we hope, the positive things that are going on. And we already talked about some of the executive orders of President Biden and Vice President Harris. But I wanted to talk a little bit about this historic moment we have today and coming up for the next few weeks, and that is a Senate trial after the president has left office. The idea of impeachment after leaving office by itself doesn't sound right, but he was already impeached. He was impeached in the House, so a Senate trial certainly can take place. And if Republican senators say, well, a Senate trial can't take place, then certainly we can have him tried in regular courts. So no matter how you look at it, it's going to be a difficult situation for the Trump people. And he's got some of the finest lawyers, the ones that were below Rudy Giuliani, Bruce Castor Jr., who we'll talk about shortly. But the head of the prosecution, I call the prosecution, the head of the Senate trial for the side of democracy in the United States is Representative Jamie Raskin, and he is from Maryland. He's a well-known and highly regarded representative from the House of Representatives here in the Free State. And after that vote happened, now we're going ahead with the trial. But let's hear from Representative Raskin. Now, he sadly just lost his son very recently due to depression, and our deepest sympathy goes out to him and to his family. And but he nevertheless wanted to come in and do this because this is what he feels he has to do for the Constitution. Let's hear to Representative Jamie Raskin. This comes to us from The Guardian.
My youngest daughter, Tabitha, was there with me on Wednesday, January 6th. It was the day after we buried her brother, our son Tommy, the saddest day of our lives. Also, there was my son-in-law, Hank, who's married to our oldest daughter, Hannah, and I consider him a son, too. And then there was a sound I will never forget, the sound of pounding on the door like a battering ram, the most haunting sound I ever heard, and I will never forget it. My chief of staff, Julie Tagan, was with Tabitha and Hank, locked and barricaded in that office. The kids hiding under the desk, placing what they thought were their final texts and whispered phone calls to say their goodbyes. They thought they were going to die. But I hugged them, and I apologized, and I told my daughter Tabitha. She's 24 and a brilliant algebra teacher in Teach for America. Now, I told her how sorry I was, and I promised her that it would not be like this again the next time she came back to the Capitol with me. And you know what she said? She said, "Dad, I don't want to come back to the Capitol again."
So what we have to look at, folks, is this. That is just a bit from a representative, Raskin. Now, his daughter's 24 years old, and he just lost his son, 25, sadly. But his daughter was in there with him in the Capitol, and she thought she was going to die. Many people thought they were going to die because of the complete lack of security. The fact that the Secret Service weren't doing their jobs. The fact that the Capitol Police as a whole weren't doing their jobs. A lot of them were, but some of them weren't, and there wasn't enough of them on duty. The Metropolitan Police weren't there because President Trump didn't want them there. He didn't want them to call a state of emergency. I mean, there was one case after another, but we have to look at individual people and say what his daughter, Jamie Raskin, his daughter's 24, but she said, "Dad, I don't want to come back to the Capitol again." Where do we finally, as a nation, say enough is enough? Now, we have a new president and vice president, and we solved that finally after January 6th happened, and we had an inauguration, which was a lockdown inauguration, of course, and now we're moving on. President Biden's already signed a ton of executive orders. I talked about a lot of those in the last show. I'll talk about more what's going on in the next few shows, but keep in mind how close we were in the United States of America to losing our country, to losing our democracy. I'm almost 63 years old, folks. I was born and raised in California. I've lived in Maryland for pretty much two-thirds of my life at this point, but I've been all over this country, every state except two. I've traveled around the world, and I thought I'd seen everything. I really thought after 9/11 that was going to be the worst thing I ever saw, and it was definitely one of the worst things. But the almost overthrow of your government, if it had been overthrown, what would we be doing right now? Would Trump be back in office? I mean, where exactly? I mean, we went wrong on so many places and so many things happened. Now, of course, Donald Trump does not have Rudy Giuliani because I believe he's lost his license. That's why he's not defending him at this trial. But the Senate trial is going ahead, and we'll have more on that as we move ahead. Now, what happens is this. The reason the Senate trial is important is if he's convicted, Trump not only will lose a lot, but he will never be able to hold public office again. Now, it's funny because the Republicans seem to think, and today's vote would seem to indicate that, 56-44. 44 of them think that betraying your country is okay. Being a traitor to your country is okay. Committing treason against the United States is okay. All of this is fine because it was Donald Trump, because it's the one they love, the one they're in love with, this infatuation. The Republicans, all of them really don't love him. Some of them even had the balls to come up and say, you know, I'm gonna vote for impeachment. I'm going to vote to convict, and I'm going to do that. Not many of them, and I don't think he'll be convicted. But the point is, folks, what you have to look at is and say is, what is wrong with these people? What does Donald Trump have on them? I mean, did each of them kill 50 people or something, and he has the dirt on you? I mean, honestly, It's almost beyond belief. He's not even in office anymore. But he has a hold on people and on so many people in the Republican Party, and so many of those who just watch Fox News and their QAnon supporters and their Proud Boy supporters. We certainly have to keep an eye on this. Now, again, the Senate trial is critically important, and I had to cover it even though I didn't really want to. But I want to mention too that after the Senate trial, Trump is not going to get off scot-free. There's a lot of things that are be going on we'll be talking about for many, many months and years to come. But that one right there, Representative Jamie Raskin from Maryland, talking about what it was like inside. Now, as we move ahead and say, well, what's the next step? What are we going to be doing next? We have to look at in the trial itself today, the first day of the Senate trial, Trump attorney Bruce Castor Jr., he was a Montgomery County lead prosecutor, Montgomery County, Maryland, where I live. I know there's Montgomery counties all over the country. He was, high up in that he was a lead county prosecutor for a large county. Montgomery County is a large county here in Maryland. And he's known for a few things, but he certainly wouldn't have been high on the list for most people as far as the top choice for attorney. Now, I've just read before I came on the air here that former President Trump is not too pleased with the defense, if you want to call it that, that he had today. But Bruce Castor Jr. said, quote, "We'll never hear anything representing Trump defending the violence on January 6th. At the same time, or anyone representing Trump defending the violence of January 6th, at the same time on January 6th, Trump said, quote, "These are things and events that happen when a sacred landslide election victory is so unceremoniously and viciously stripped away from great patriots who have been badly and unfairly treated for so long. Go home with love and in peace and remember this day forever." Now, that sure sounds like former President Trump was defending the violence and defending what went on. Maybe I'm wrong, but those are his exact words and what he said. Now, another bit of news, and we have to keep talking about the people who were involved in January 6th, and we're going to have some special episodes on that because it's such an incredible day that we can never forget, and we can never let our children, our children's children, and future generations always remember. Unfortunately, it happened on our watch. Now, this comes to us from Time Magazine, from Alana Durkin-Richer and Michael Balsamo from the Associated Press. A man who authorities say is a leader of the far-right Oath Keepers militia group and helped to organize a ring of other extremists and led them in the attack last month at the U.S. Capitol, has held a top-secret security clearance for decades and previously worked for the FBI, his attorney said Monday. Now, the fact that he held a top-secret security clearance on its own, you know, and that he was part of the Capitol insurrection, you know, you can kind of take that with a grain of salt to an extent, but he held what I had back when I was in the Air Force and in the intelligence service of the National Security Agency, top secret with compartments is what we call them, which means that, you know, they checked everybody. And this was a long time ago back in California, but they went and interviewed everybody that I knew. Everybody, if they were growing marijuana in the backyard, they knew it, but they didn't really care. Thomas Caldwell, who authorities believe holds a leadership role in the extremist group, worked as a section chief for the FBI until 2009 after retiring from the Navy. Actually, 2009 and 10. Charging documents show messages between Caldwell and the others about arranging hotel rooms in the Washington area in the final days before the siege. In one Facebook message from a rioter to Caldwell, it says, quote, "We'll probably call you tomorrow, mainly because I like to know what at WTF the plan is. You are the man, commander," all in caps. Authorities say the Oath Keepers communicated during the attack about where they were during the siege. At one point during the siege, Caldwell received a message that said, quote, "All members are in the tunnels under the Capitol, according to court documents. Seal them in and turn on the gas," it said. Seal them in and turn on the gas. Now, there's no reason not to believe that they weren't serious, because they were serious about everything else, folks. People died in that Capitol. People were badly injured. Eyes were gouged out. there was a complete attack on our democracy that went defenseless. So when they make a threat that they're going to turn on the gas and gas members of Congress in the tunnels, you should believe it. Because they had all kinds of explosive devices in the Capitol. They had all kinds of weapons that they just walked in with. We're going to be talking about, I'm going to be talking about this to the day I die, I'm sure. And I'm sure that we'll be talking about it for centuries. And it's something that is just, not just a stain on the United States of America, but the Republican Party needs to disband. Because the Republican Party is a joke. The Republican Party doesn't represent the United States or our democracy. The Republican Party represents Donald Trump. That's the only thing they love these days, folks. They don't love anything else. And you can see it by their votes and the way they're voting right now. They're still voting to protect Donald Trump, even though he's not president anymore. Now, I wanted to end up this slightly briefer than normal show with a little bit of a little humor, so we could have something that would be a, it's humor in a way, but I'll explain it to you. It comes to us from LGBTQ Nation. It's by Alex Bollinger. And this is an Iranian cleric warns followers the COVID-19 vaccine turns people gay. I knew it. I told you. A religious leader in Iran told his followers that the COVID-19 vaccine is capable of turning people gay. Quote, "Don't go near those who have had the COVID vaccine," wrote Ayatollah Abbas Tabrizan of Qom on the instant messaging platform Telegram, according to the Saudi broadsheet Arab News. Quote, "They have become homosexuals." Tabrizan, who has over 200,000 followers on the platform, has long been a critic of science-based medicine. Like other clerics in the regime, also Tabrizan relates all shortages to sexuality. The clerics in Iran are suffering from a lack of knowledge and humanity, according to Iranian dissident Sheena Vajodi. Tabrizan isn't the only religious anti-vaxxer asserting the COVID-19 vaccines can turn people gay. Israeli rabbi Daniel Assor said last month that the vaccine can make you gay. "The virus was part of the government's plan." This is his quote, by the way, from the Israeli rabbi. "The virus was part of the government's plan to cull global population. So the first step for the government, according to him, was to use the virus to cull the global population. And then the vaccine also, because it'll be slower to cull the population. The population will be culled, but, you know, it would have been faster just to, you know, to use the COVID-19. But with the vaccine, it turns everybody gay, and eventually you're not going to have a population because everybody's gay and nobody's having babies. In response, the Israeli LGBTQ organization Haruda said they are, quote, "currently gearing up to welcome our new impending members." Well, that's certainly something for them to look forward to. They come out of the woodwork. They do more and more and more. And unfortunately, we're right at the one-year anniversary, if you will, since COVID-19 really started hitting, started beginning in the United States. And it's unfortunate that we've ended up where we are, but we do have now at least plans in motion, vaccines coming. We'll have much, much more on that coming up. This president, this vice president, this administration are doing a lot. And again, if you don't think they are, just go back and listen to my last show where I talked about all the executive orders President Biden has. We'll have more coming up. Maybe you don't agree with everything. I don't agree with everything everybody does. I don't agree with every Democrat. But certainly, it's time to get our country turned around. And one thing the journalists are saying all over Washington right now is what a relief it is to go into a White House that seems somewhat, if you could call it, quote, normal, where people are normal. We don't have criminals trying to overthrow the government and a lead criminal as president. So that's where we are, folks. And that's what we have to look forward to right now. We want to move ahead, and we want everybody to know the jig is up, making a difference. We're going to be making a difference big time now. And thank goodness we have a new president and vice president. Thank you for listening. We'll be back more with the trial and more with the COVID situation in the next episode. Thanks for listening. I'm Eric Crossley.